Thanks for listening to Exploring the Wine Glass podcast, the podcast for people who love wine. I'm Lori Budd, a UC Davis winemaking program and WSET Level 2 graduate. You can find Exploring the Wine Glass on all the socials as well as your favorite podcast catchers. If you haven't subscribed yet, now's the perfect time. I promise I'll never tell you what to drink, but I'll always share what's in my glass. Hey everyone, thanks for listening in. Today, we are back on Winefabet Street, where the letter of the day is H and it stands for the Hunter Valley. The Hunter Valley is located in the state of New South Wales. Semillon is widely considered the iconic wine of the region, but in terms of plantings, the most widely planted grape varieties in descending order are Chardonnay, Semillon, and Verdejo among the whites, and the Shiraz, Cabernet Sauvignon, and Merlot among the reds. So unscrew, uncork, or saber a bottle as Debbie and I discuss the history, general characteristics, and suggested food pairings for wines from the Hunter Valley. And please, take the time to rate, subscribe, and review Exploring the Wine Glass. I'd really appreciate it. Sláinte! Hey everybody, welcome to Winefabet Street. I am so happy to see Debbie in sort of kind of in person.
I know. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be with you and talking wine, and I have an empty glass.
I know, I have an empty glass too. I think it's time that we fill it.
I think so.
Very important okay. We fill it, and then we'll get into it.
Yeah, H is for Hunter Valley.
That is true.
Hunter Valley, Australia.
So I'll start Elmo, and then we'll pour.
Okay.
Or, well, he's not Elmo anymore, but you know what I mean.
Okay, sounds good.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, and then the Q, R, S, T, U, V. W, A, Y, and Z. Now I know my ABC. Next time, won't you sing with me?
So happy Winefabet Street.
Yeah.
And as Debbie said before, we are the letter H and we are drinking Hunter Valley. And I have Tempest 2 Sauvignon Blanc. And it is 2016.
Hope Estates Basalt Block Shiraz.
Ooh, Shiraz. So you went with one of Hunter Valley's popular varietals.
I did, what they're known for.
I decided to go for a gamble and go for something that is not quite as popular there, Sauvignon Blanc. But I figured I'd give it a try. So,
yeah, what do you have to lose?
What do I have to lose?
A friend, Anne, my Irish friend, and she only drinks Sauvignon Blanc, and there is a brand from Hunter Valley that she can own, that she really likes, that she found when she was actually in Australia, and she can only get it from some store, liquor store in New Jersey, and she has it shipped to me, and when I go to New York, I bring it to her.
That's awesome. So,
cheers.
Cheers, Sláinte.
Nice.
Actually, it is very nice. The acidity.
That's pretty golden, unless it's the lighting.
It's pretty gold.
Yeah.
It's pretty gold.
I have to tell you, when I came up to my office to go and open the bottle, I thought at 7:30, I said, I better open this and let it air, and then realize it was a screw top. So I'm like, okay, this is easy.
Yeah, nice and easy. Mine was a screw tap also. It's actually very nice. It's got, I'm such the acid head. It's got a lot of acidity. It's got the grapefruit and tropical, but it is not the Kim Crawford in your face grapefruit. So, I mean, I know people badmouth Kim Crawford. I actually like Kim Crawford. And by the way, we discovered Kirkland Sauvignon Blanc.
Okay, yep, I think I've had that.
It's $5 a bottle.
Oh, really?
I'm telling you, it's pretty much Kim Crawford Sauvignon Blanc.
It could be his excess.
Yeah.
It could be his excess.
But now, this is really
very nice. It's plum. It's got a little bit of spice to it. It's not as heavy as I thought, because I'm thinking more Syrah from like California. But this is, I mean, it's very enjoyable. It's really nice.
Yeah. Now, I'm trying to remember. I actually had to order mine because thanks to COVID, our liquor store is closed. Total Wine is closed. So I had to order it online. And I think it was $12.99. So not so bad. But then when you add the shipping, it's like $15. But I'm pretty sure I'd be able to get this at a Total Wine or something like that.
Yeah, well, I have a story I was telling you before we went on. So I ordered this. I started looking for Hunter Valley, both in Jersey and in New York, back in March. And I wasn't having much luck, and I knew I was going back to New York, so I figured I'd just go purchase it. You know, I'd go to a couple other liquor stores. Well, that never happened because of COVID. So about end of April, April 24th, I ordered this from Wine Chateau that's located in Jersey. They have 3 stores up towards New York City. And I thought, okay, no problem. And I ordered it, and thinking it'll be here in a week, if that. I got it today. Yeah. I was like freaking out last week. I called them, but long story short, and I can't remember how much this was, but it was under $20.
Nice.
And Karen, oh my gosh, your Malbec from the Hunter Valley was $6.99.
That's.
Yeah.
Oh, she's saying Costco's Malbec is $6.99, but the grapes are from Argentina.
Not the Malbec he's drinking.
Yeah. We did. So, we've been exploring all of the Kirkland wines to see which are good ones and which are not so much. So far, of the Kirkland, we like the Sauvignon Blanc. The Merlot was okay, but that was $4.99. So literally, you know, how can you not drink it? You know, if it's good enough that you're not going to throw it down the sink for $4.99. And then we did a Ravenswood Zinfandel, the old vine Zin from Ravenswood, their bulk wine, was $5. So we've gotten it. We're drinking way more now that we're in quarantine. And we can't afford to keep opening the really good wines, you know. Our Saturdays and Sundays are including 2 bottles now. And it's like a bottle a night.
Maybe up to 2 bottles almost every night. Like you have the one bottle that you drink at 5, you open at 5 o'clock, and then it's time to eat dinner at 7, and you're done with that 5 o'clock wine. So,
yeah.
The past couple nights has only been one wine, one bottle. Yeah. So
we tend to do one bottle on weekdays, but 2 on weekends. And I've taught my husband how to play cribbage, so he's becoming the master of the game. He doesn't win very much, but love the game.
So maybe we should start and
introduce ourselves. We're like 10 minutes in and we haven't introduced ourselves yet.
I know. Here we just started talking. It's so great just to be in each other's company. I'm Debbie Giaquindo. I'm the Hudson Valley Wine Goddess. I'm a wine blogger, a wine writer. I'm a certified specialist of wine, a wine location specialist in Port and Champagne. I own a restaurant in Stone Harbor, New Jersey called Kitchen 330. And I'm the author of a book called Tapping the Hudson Valley. All that wine I'm drinking, Tapping the Hudson Valley, and that's available on Amazon.
And I am Lori Budd. My husband Michael and I own Dracena Wines, an artisanal winery in Paso Robles specializing in Cabernet Franc. We finally have a bottling date for our rosé that has been held captive by this COVID. So we are bottling on Wednesday, and we are shipping those babies out to everybody very quickly with a note of please let rest for a while. We are in bottle shock and transportation shock. But so we are excited that we are finally bottling our rosé. We are contracted this year for a Chenin Blanc. I also write under the name Exploring the Wine Glass, along with the podcast Exploring the Wine Glass. and I am a WSET Level 2 with Distinction graduate of the UC Davis winemaking program, and now Psalm Service certified. So as I have been quarantined, I decided to do a little bit more. So I took a psalm class. So now I am psalm service certified. Woo! Yes.
All right.
So shall we get into the Hunter Valley?
We shall. Shall you start?
Yes. Well, I have history. All right. So here we go. The Hunter Valley history.
Oh my gosh, it's my best friend calling me.
I didn't think to turn my phone off. I don't get any calls.
All right, so the history of the Hunter Valley. So the Hunter Valley is located in the state of New South Wales. It has been inhabited by the people of the hills and plains. That is what they go by in long term. But they are known as the Wanarua. There are actually two sets of separate distinct tribes of the Wanarua. The Wurimi live in the northeastern shores, while the Awapka live in the southeastern shores. And they do not call the Hunter Valley Hunter Valley. They call it the Kokwun. There are a bunch of Wananora's tribal stories, and they are so sad. I was like looking them up, and they were absolutely so, so sad. And I'm hoping this works. I'm hoping. And I don't think it's going to work. Oh, it's not going to work. So I had a video of one of the stories, and it's a cartoon story. And what it is it's this woman and this man who is in love, and he gets called off to war. And once he leaves, she feels, you know, she can feel him as he's there. And during the war, he actually gets killed. And in the cartoon, keep in mind, it is a cartoon. In the cartoon, he gets a spear through the stomach and he falls over dead. And at that moment, she can feel her heart break and she begins to cry. And her tears turn into a fire and the mountain thereon goes up in flames. That's the story.
Oh, my goodness.
That's the story. There's another story of somebody who is picking fruit by the water, and she goes to the water, and, you know, the one woman tells her to leave alone, and she goes back, and now she's looking for somebody else, and this water monster comes out and jumps out of the water and eats her. I'm like, these are the saddest stories. I hope these aren't like nursery rhymes, because all of the kids of the Wanarua tribe, they must have nightmares if this is the stories they get told. But they look very happy in this picture. So I'm sorry the little video didn't work, because it really was an intriguing cartoon. Anyway, the Europeans discovered the Hunter River in 1797 after a group of convicts escaped, and Lieutenant John Shortland was sent on a mission to find them. So how cool is that to have a stamp, you know, with your image on it? The river was used to transport timber and coal by way of the steamships until about 1820, when John Howe actually discovered a land route that can get them between Windsor and Singleton. So this road is now known as the Putty Road. And it kind of cracked me up because, like, it's the Putty Road. So I was thinking of the Ohio State University. But, you know, this is what happens to my brain in quarantine. I start thinking stupid things. The road was named after John Hunter. And the captain who was the captain of the HMS Sirius. The HMS Sirius was the flagship of the First Fleet, which was set out from Portsmouth, England in 1787 to establish the first European colony in New South Wales, Australia. And in 1790, the ship was wrecked on a reef just southeast of Kingston Pier in Slaughter Bay. And so this is where the name of that road came from. Now, because of this region had such valuable resources, remember the timber and the coal, once that development of the road came about, the settlers came in and like droves. So the settlements became very intensified, and there were two main areas of this region that were developed, the Cessnock and the Wollombi. And the Wollombi really became the center of trade for the area. So that's where all of the commercial and administrative buildings were built at the time. And the area remained active until the decline of the area in about 1870. But these buildings were all built by convicts, and several of them still actually stand. And some are used for other meanings now. One of the main ones is the Mula Villa. And this is a two-story Georgian house that was, like I said, convict built. And it took them 1 year to build this house. So, like, they do better back then than they do now. When we built our house, it took, like, over almost 2 years to build our house. So in 1840 to 41, for David Dunlop, who was the first magistrate of the police district, of that district. And that original house is still standing, and it was made out of solid sandstone. The next one, which I have a picture of, this is the Wollombi Courthouse. And the Wollombi Courthouse is actually listed as a historic site, and it was constructed in 1866, and it is now the site of a museum. Another main site that's still still up is the St. Michael's Catholic Church, and this is the one of Australia's oldest mainland Catholic churches. On September 30th of 1840, Reverend John Bede Poulding was the first Catholic bishop of Sydney. He laid the foundation stone on land that was bought for £5. £5 bought them all of this property. Yep.
Then it was probably a lot of money.
I'm sure. So this is near Coonan's Bridge and on the Wollombi Brook. And from 1843, the services were held in the church, and it was built again with all sandstone. And following the Great Flood of 1893, the church was dismantled, but they dismantled it stone by stone, and then they rebuilt it on what's now its present site, which is between the old post office and the forge. So how cool is that? Like, the building was ruined, but they actually stone by stone took it and then rebuilt it in another location. And the last one that is still standing is St. John's Anglican Church. And this was designed by one of the last great church architects in Australia named Edmund Blackett. St. John is also built of sandstone, and it is still used today. And all of these images and all the information was on huntervalleyvisitorcenter.com. So in terms of wine, the history of the Hunter Valley goes very back into history. George Wyndham, William Kelman, and James King are considered the original pioneers of winemaking in the valley. In 1823, which was really just 3 years after John Howe discovered the land route, they already had 20 acres of vineyards planted along the northern bank. Today, this area is now known as Dalwood, and it is between Singleton and Maitland. Now, here's the history or the family relationship that goes on. It's a little twisted, but it's kind of a little, you know, it's like a little web, but it's kind of interesting. James Busby was responsible for bringing 500 vine cuttings to Hunter Valley from private plantings in Europe and South Africa. So this is a partial list of his notebook of what he had. He came to the area with his sister Catherine, who ended up marrying William Kelman, who was on a trip with them. Catherine and William took the first official land grant at Kirkton and began planting. By 1840, there were over 500 acres of vineyards planted. So it bloomed, it blossomed very quickly. The vines flourished, and so did the Hunter Valley. So more families decided to come into the area and planted more vineyards. and Dr. Henry Lindman, the Drayton, Tyrell, and Wilkinson families all began their winemaking back in the 19th century. And if you're into Australia wine, those names are the prominent names of Australian wines. So they started way back and they are still prominent. Following World War I, many returning Australian veterans were given land grants in the Hunter Valley, which led to more vines under, or more acreage under vine. During the Depression, the vineyard saw a serious decline, but due to the change in the market to more fortified wines, so there was the Depression, and then during this time, I guess people started being more into fortified wines, so the combination of that really diminished the ability of these winemakers to make the wines that they were famous for or popular for. By the 60s, the market changed once again, and they no longer wanted the port wines. They wanted dry wines, and that's how they started to flourish again. So during this time, Leo Burig was a Sydney businessman, and he began marketing the first commercially successful Hunter Valley Semillon under the label of Rheingold. In the early 70s, Murray Tyrell released Australia's first commercial bottling of Chardonnay, which has been deemed the wine that started the Australian Chardonnay craze. According to the wine experts Hugh Johnson and Jancis Robinson, Tyrell's VAT 47 Hunter Valley Chardonnay was the wine that launched a million bottles. From 1956 to 76, plantings in the Hunter Valley grew from 466 hectares, which is about 1,100 acres, to over 4,100 hectares, which is over 10,000 acres, so a tenfold. And after Australian wine bloom in the 1990s, there are now about 11,000 acres, or 4,600 hectares. Today, in the Hunter Valley, there are approximately 120 wineries, and most of them fall under what is considered a boutique winery status. Semillon is the widely considered the iconic wine of the region, but it is not the most planted. In terms of plantings, the most widely planted grape varieties in descending order, Chardonnay, then Semillon, and Verdejo, which I didn't even know there was Verdejo from there, so I'm pretty excited about that. And then for the reds, it's Shiraz, Cabernet Sauvignon, and then Merlot. The wine region's appellation system is known as the Australian Geographical Indication, or the GI, and it is responsible for the entire Hunter Valley and its tributaries. The Hunter region includes everything except Newcastle and the nearby coastal areas, as well as some national parks in the Mudgee Shire. That is the history. And now I'm going to drink.
You do that. And I'll switch over to the characteristics of the Hunter Valley. So the Hunter Valley is separated into two different regions somewhat. You have the upper and lower Hunter. Most significant of the significant wineries are located in the lower Hunter Valley, in the southern foothills of the Broken Back Range. Hunter Valley red wine is dominated by Shiraz, and there's an assortment of whites, but Semillon is the iconic white. That's what the white wine that Hunter Valley is known for is Semillon, and red is Shiraz. The climate is warm and humid. Rain, humidity, cloud cover, and gentle sea breezes migrate the warmth. It's one of the hottest and wettest regions in Australia. And the region is also, believe it or not, it's affected by the maritime influences. So here we have some dirt.
We do.
The soil, it's quite varied. Certain wines grow in better in certain soils. The Shiraz does best on what's called friable red duplex. And red duplex soils are quite simple soils, which have two distinct layers, a topsoil or a subsoil, and a subsoil. And the topsoil has a lighter texture than the subsoil, which is usually clay. And the layers also differ in color. With the topsoil is usually darker than the red to brown colored subsoil. the topsoil, the reason why it's darker is due to the high organic matter content that's in it. In some cases, there is a bleached zone in the topsoil, which is called A2-horizon. And then there's also loam soils. The semolina does best on the flats of the Hunter Valley, which are ancient river beds, and they have pale and sandy alluvial soils. So it's all about the soils, and it's all about where the actual grapes grow. So here we have Hunter Valley semolina. And I picked this slide because you can see on the two distinct different colors of the semolina. The three bottles, how dark and rich they are, that's an aged. And the ones they're drinking out of the barrel, which is a young one, it's very pale in color. So surprisingly, the semolina grows well in the humidity. When you drink it young, it's zesty, it's crisp, and as it ages, it turns deep golden color, and it has a nutty honey and straw scent to it. Semolina is usually picked when the bricks are low, so they get around 10 to 11% alcohol. It's crushed with minimal skin and seed extract, and it's fermented cold in stainless steel and then bottled. So young semolina has a yellow, light yellow color to it. The aromas are citrus, grass, straw, lanolin, and subtle green herbs. It's crisp with chalky minerality, and it does have high acidity. As it ages, even just as young as 5 years, it can turn, and it's a little bit honeyed, and it has some toasty grilled nut characteristics in the wine. And, you know, you would think that it would have spent so much time in oak, but it didn't. It's just how the wine itself ages. So there are four distinct styles of semolina in Australia. There's the un-oak single variety, the oak single variety, then there's a blended, and then there's a dessert wine. And there's also other wines like other grapes that are grown in the region as well, as Lori said, Chardonnay and Verdejo. And then we'll talk about Shiraz. It's planted over 140 years ago, and it's the red wine of the region. It's a very fresh, vibrant, medium weight, and shows spice, which actually mine does. It's between 12 and 14% alcohol. Mine's 13. It's elegant in youth and ages beautifully between 10 and 30 years. At first, you'll have a hearty flavor. It's rich in color. It can be gamey. And as it ages, it becomes silky, smooth, and with earthy notes. Shiraz dominates the region, but there is also Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot planted. It is a, you know, medium, I would say a medium body. Mine happens to be a medium body wine. It's 13%, you know, alcohol. It's not as powerful as a California Shiraz, but it's powerful. But it you can't think California when you're drinking Hunter. And quite honestly, this is actually the wine I have is actually quite lovely. So
we do want to mention that Shiraz and Syrah is the same.
Yes,
it is the same grape variety. It is just a distinction of where it comes from. And there are some areas of Australia that are converting it over to calling it Syrah to eliminate some of the confusion. But then it goes right back because there's some New World places or, you know, American places that are calling it Shiraz so that people are thinking it's Shiraz. So Australia and the United States need to get together and decide which they want to call it. But the Shiraz, typically, if it's being called Shiraz, does have a profile that's a little bit more spicier than the Syrah, typically, and how it's fermented, and that it tends to, you know, the winemakers, sometimes they'll call it Shiraz because of how they're processing it versus Syrah, but it is the same grape.
Oh, that's interesting. I just automatically think of Shiraz as Syrah from Australia, and then there's Syrah that's Syrah from actually dates, because it's grown in New York too.
Right. But there are some Australian winemakers in regions that are calling it Syrah because they are producing the wine. The winemaking process that they are going through is similar to how Americans do it, how it is over here, but more so the fullness of the body and the ripeness of the fruit. So we are much more fruit in your face Syrah, and they are more spice Syrah, right? Is yours right? Am I?
You got the spice on the finish. You have this, and you know how I love. I mean, right. That's me. I'm just like I'm like that black spice, even licorice spice, and I don't even like licorice, but I like the licorice of the wine. That's me. It's all over it.
But it's more spice with the black fruit profile.
Yes.
Where
not juice. It's not a juice bomb.
Right. Where American California Syrah tends to be fruit forward with the spice in the background. So those winemakers that are producing it in those warmer regions that are getting that type of wine have started calling it Syrah. But
and I know in New York they call it Syrah.
Yeah, that's a little WSET knowledge there. All right. And now a word from our sponsor. Did you know that Dracena Wines now has a wine club? We named it the Chalk Club. Draco is on our label, but Vegas was getting a little jealous, so we decided he deserved to be our club spokesdog. In Las Vegas, betting chalk means that you are betting on all of the favorites. We are betting that we are one of your favorite wineries, so we thought the name was apropos. The club is simple, yet a bit different than most. When you wager on us, we will ship you 3 bottles of wine twice a year, once in April and once in September. You can choose all red or mix of red and rosé. You immediately receive 15% off of all your wine purchases throughout the year, but what makes our club stand out is the progressive discount. Let your club membership ride into the next year, your discount increases. Each year you parlay your membership, you receive an additional 5% off up to a planned maximum of 25%. Your club shipments are discounted to a flat $15, plus we'll cover your club shipping cost for your second shipment. That's $15 house money in a sure bet for you. So please head to our website, DracenaWines.com, and find out all of the benefits of joining the Chalk Club and how to sign up. We've stacked the odds so that you can get our award-winning wines without breaking the bank. So it is officially drink time now. So as we did, okay. So mine is obviously, you know, it is light, but it is golden. It is on the nose. There is grapefruit. There's actually some honey, like an almondy, I'm making up my own words. Like a nut, an almond flavor, aroma. But on the palate, wow. I mean, it's dry. Obviously, it's dry. It's high acidity. As I salivate, it is not light bodied. It is more of a, I wouldn't exactly go to the 2% milk, maybe a 1% milk level. So it's kind of like medium minus or light plus bodied. And on the flavors, I have to say the aromas, and I think this is very typical of a Sauvignon Blanc, at least my experience. Sauvignon Blancs to me are very aromatic. So when you take it, you get these pronounced aromas, but the flavors are muted compared to the level of aromatics. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with that.
It's kind of like the same thing, a Gewürztraminer. You know, you put that up to your nose and it's floral, yeah, and it's all of this. And the flavors are there. It's not bad flavors. The flavors are there. But the intensity level is lower. So where I would say this wine is pronounced aromas, I'm going to say it's medium flavors. And it's got the grapefruit. But again, like I said earlier, not in your face grapefruit. It's got kind of pineapple, so more tropical flavors there. And the finish is just going and going and going. It actually travels down the back of my tongue. Like, I can feel it on the front of my tongue, and it just lingers.
Are you salivating?
Yes. Oh, the acidity is, my sides of my tongue are like, wah. But the finish just lingers on the back of your tongue. And this is really a beautiful wine and very good by itself. But I can see a whole slew of food that can go with it. So the winery itself is Tempest 2. And this is directly from their website. Okay, directly from their website.
What a cool place.
Yeah, right? I love it. Very modernistic. So Tempest 2 is backed by four generations of winemaking heritage, and they pride themselves on being the cutting edge Australian winery, but they like to do things just a bit different from their website. From its spiritual home in the Hunter Valley, Australia's oldest wine region, Tempest 2 sources its fruit from Australia's premium vineyard regions to craft wines with both substance and style. That's their view. Not too shabby, if you ask me. So according to them, their approach is very simple. We only deal with the best regions and the best varieties. The winery itself pays homage to the Australian varieties and styles by growing vines in the unique Australian regions. In addition to the Hunter Valley, they have vineyards in the Barossa Valley, the Langhorne Creek, and Adelaide Hills. Tempest 2 was founded in 1997 by one of the most iconic and revered wine families, the McGiggins, whose winemaking history dates back four generations to 1860. Their wines is a force in the international wine world, recently being crowned International Winemaker of the Year at the 2016 International Wine and Spirits Competition in London. I love their label. The Tempest 2 logo takes its inspiration from the poplar tree that lines the driveway to the original Hermitage Road Winery. Today, they've lined the cellar door driveway with poplar trees to celebrate their beginnings. I'm not gonna lie. So the gentlemen that are watching this right now, you can just like put your ear, you know, do the la 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 la. That is one mighty fine looking man right there.
That is a nice looking winemaker.
That is a very nice winemaker. I was like, I am going to find a way to get that picture into this slideshow because that is mighty fine looking man right there. So that is Andrew Duff. And he began his venture in the wine industry with Reynolds Yarraman Winery. And he started at just 15 years old. So from then, yeah, right? So from then on, he just absorbed.
Following his dream.
Yeah. He just absorbed everything that, like, as a 15-year-old can, all of that stuff coming in. He went to New Zealand in 1997. He completed college and went on to study wine science at the Eastern Institute in Hawke's Bay. During his study, he worked vintages every year, moving around New Zealand and Australia. Every vintage, he was at a different winery to gain the knowledge. And so he landed at the Tyrells in the Hunter Valley and Church Road Winery in Hawke's Bay. In 2008, he moved back to Australia and he got a job as the assistant winemaker here at Tempest 2 because he really admired the family. And since then, he has been promoted to lead winemaker. our head winemaker. And I'm just going to say I did do a little, you know, looking around, and there's nothing that says that man is married. So just letting you know. The fruit from their for their wines is sourced from premium vineyards within the Adelaide region of South Australia and obviously the Hunter Valley. Their goal is to create fresh, crisp styles. And this wine, they say, has gooseberry and herbaceous characteristics, along with the tropical fruit. I have said the tropical fruit, and there is a very slight hint of green. I am not a fan of green in wine, but I think Sauvignon Blanc has to have a little, similar to how I'm not a fan of bell pepper in Cab Franc, but yeah, I feel our Cab Franc has to have a hint of bell pepper because that's what makes Cab Franc Cab Franc. So the green herbaceousness, this is like good to me because it's there, but it's not in your face. It lets you know if you were blind tasting this that it was Sauvignon Blanc. They say gooseberry, which is a very common character within Sauvignon Blanc. I have no idea what a real gooseberry tastes like, so I can't say whether it's gooseberry or not. But that is Tempest 2.
Okay, so I have this Hope Shiraz. It's a 2017 Bossel Lock Shiraz from the Hunter Valley. And I have to say, when I went to the website to do my research, there really wasn't much on Hope Estate. It's you know, as far as the research goes. So I actually emailed them. I got a nice email back.
Very nice and very rare.
Yeah, exactly, right? I was shocked because I wasn't quite sure what. Oh shoot! I just opened up the wrong something. I shouldn't have. But you know, I was glad, and they were going to try and maybe tune in. Oh. So I probably shouldn't have started this live presentation yet. I probably should like talk about the wine. So there's some red and black fruit going on, and there's like a hint of black spice. And plum, cherry, red fruit, some black fruit, and then in the very back end, there's like that hint of black pepper spice and maybe some vanilla that kind of like, I don't want to say burns your nose, but you know how it gets up there.
Yes.
It's juicy, but not forward juicy. It's just like you're biting into a plum.
Oh, okay.
A fresh, ripe plum as you bite into it, and it just, you know, the juices just like fall down your arm. That's, you know.
A freshly picked one.
I'm sorry, what?
A freshly picked one.
Yes. It's got a lot of red fruit, juicy, and towards the finish of it, it's got like this hint of the black spice. So now I'll go into the winery. I don't have any good looking winemaker here, so sorry.
No. Sorry, I'm just saying I saw him first.
Yeah, so Hope Estate is located in Pokalbin, New South Wales, Australia. They're not just a winery. They're also a brewery and a big concert venue. They've hosted Elton John and the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Bruce Springsteen, and the Rolling Stones.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So I was pretty impressed. And so there's the venue.
Wow.
And they have what I didn't show. They have a few different venues all set up because it's quite a lot in their different vineyards and stuff. So it's kind of a cool place. It kind of reminds me a little bit of Wente. Have you ever been to Wente?
I have not had the pleasure of physically being there, but I've seen images.
Yeah, I've been to concerts there. So with Patty, actually.
Yeah.
And,
wait, I'm sorry. So, Patty, when Debbie and I go to Australia, you want to come now?
So, their Bossel Block is located in the Hunter Valley among the hills of Broken Back Mountain Range. The range was formed by volcanic activity, leaving the red rich soil with basalt. And that's a mineral rich soil that produces the finest quality of low yielding grapes, which Hope Estate winemakers use in the single vineyard wines. So that's the picture I took off their website.
Oh!
I got away. That's not...
Teaser.
Okay, I'll go to the koala because it's cute. So Hope Estate is owned by a gentleman named Michael Hope and his family. And Michael is a pharmacist. And in 1994, he brought this broke property, which happened to have a vineyard of grapes on it. And it's something which he started as, you know, to go into retirement, and it grew into a national brand. He purchased Broke Road Estate, previously named Rothbury Estate, and ultimately great products and engaging experiences were the founding concepts of the businesses that Michael Hope's vision and determination, which continues to build and grow the brand today. So when Australia had all the fires back, was it in this past winter, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, it was half of last year, yes.
Yeah. So he formed a partnership with the Australian Koala Foundation called Hope for the Koalas campaign, and they donated $1 for every bottle of Hope Estate wine during April, May, and June of that year, last year, to the foundation. So he's very involved with the community. They're a pretty big operation. The brewery, there's lodging, there's... It's a pretty complex thing. And I have to say, this wine is, I'm really liking it. And I'll read you what it says on the back of the bottle. I really kind of need more of a magnifying glass than my glasses are giving me. But it says, our Balsalt block is located in the Hunter Valley, among the hills of the Brobach Mountain Range. It's formed by volcanic activity leading to rich red soil as the underlying basalt rock has broken down. This mineral-rich soil production concentrated low-yielding grapes by which our winemakers use to make this, you know, pretty much everything I said. And they say it's smooth, juicy palate, intense, rich mocha and spice plum fruit leading to the complex earth finished fame of Hunter Valley Shiraz. So, I mean, I like it. It's not really heavy. You know, I would drink this in the summer as a red wine. I can't drink really heavy red wines in the summer. This is perfect. This is perfect for the barbecue.
You said it was 14% alcohol?
13%.
Oh, so 13%. That's a bottle without even thinking about it.
Yeah.
Know? And that, you know, typically that's a summer red too, you know?
Yeah, it's really,
yeah. Mine is 12 and a half. So that's going to be gone before Mike even gets home.
This is very easy drinking. It's just delightful. I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah.
And the spice, the juicy plum really shows on it. Like the little bit of pepper that's on it. It's just, I have it with my barbecue over the weekend.
This is getting more and more tropical as it warms up a bit, because it was in the refrigerator and I took it out at 4:30. So it had a half an hour, but now it's sitting, you know, in the glass warming up, and it's becoming more tropical. There's like kiwi. There's
nice.
And there's more. The honeysuckle, not like,
there you go,
not deep honey. Honeysuckle mm-hmm. is there. Like I could like just keep sniffing, you know. It's a nice wine. It's a nice wine. And I will look to see if it's available at the stores once we, you know, come out of all of this.
I see a lot of Hope. When I was looking for Hunter Valley, there was Hope Estate and there was another brand and I can't remember. And
well,
I just
we have
kind
a Hope.
The label on Hope Estate.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of funny
because maybe because right now we all want Hope too. So I was kind of drawn to it.
It's kind of interesting because it's a little similar to the Hope wines here in Paso.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And it is turning my teeth purple.
Ah, it is? Yeah, see, it is. That's a sign of a good Shiraz there, right there.
Yeah.
All right. So we are up to food pairings. Now, I went a different route for this. So typically when we are doing wine for Bet Street, we have a grape variety. And the food pairings are for that grape. But the fact that this is a region, I had two options. I could go for my Sauvignon Blanc and pair all of, you know, give multiple things. But I thought it would be more beneficial to learn about the region if I did a food pairing for each of its popular varietals. So that is what I did. So instead of having all of the same pairings for a specific varietal, I went to different varietals and gave a suggestion for each of their most famous varietals. So first up, their number one varietal, and I went in growing, you know, or popularity, I guess, Semillon. So Semillon is an amazing grape, in my opinion, because it can handle that, oh, so difficult, dang asparagus. And I love asparagus. So it's really tough to pair, to have a wine with asparagus. It just like kills anything and everything around it. But Semillon can handle it. And so this is a pasta primavera with asparagus and peas. And that right there is heaven to me. Like asparagus, peas, pasta, that's heaven to me. So next up that they're popular for is their Chardonnay. So again, I don't know if I leaned towards more, at the beginning, I leaned towards more vegetarian dishes. And then you'll see halfway through, I was like, uh-oh, I gotta give those meat eaters something to pair this with. But so Chardonnay is risotto and seasonal vegetables. And again, you can see that there's asparagus in there. So risotto, asparagus, red bell pepper, that just now. Verdejo, which I didn't even know they grew there. This is an Asian chili garlic with prawns. So the Verdejo, if you don't know about Verdejo, it can handle those spicy dishes. So this is a fantastic choice in a varietal for you if you like the spicy dishes, but you might not like the Rieslings that have that petrol so much. So Verdejo. On to the reds. Well, so now we're bringing in the meats. So their Shiraz. This is barbecued Texas beef brisket. For Cabernet Sauvignon, just a nice basic meatloaf. Okay. So their Cabernet Sauvignons, I get the impression that they might be a little less tannic than as big as those Napa Cabs we have. So you've got, as Debbie was talking about, you can't think of Australian Shiraz and California Syrah. You have to have a different mindset. I think you have to have that same different mindset with this with Cabernet Sauvignon from the Hunter Valley. Merlot, this is lamb burgers. Now, this is, I think, Merlot and lamb. Not that I would ever eat lamb, but Merlot and lamb tend to go hand in hand. And last, I did do a pairing for the Tempest II Sauvignon Blanc and grilled fish tacos, which is just a classic pairing for Sauvignon Blanc. Those are my food pairings. Suggestions.
Very nice. I think this Shiraz might go good with the lamb.
Yeah, because it's lighter, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Best and fun facts. So the Hunter Valley is only 2 hours north of Sydney. It's the oldest Australian wine region. It's home to about 150 wineries, gourmet restaurants, spa treatments, and concerts in the vineyards. It produces only 2% of Australia's total wine output.
Wow.
And it never had phylloxera. And and when I was doing my research, it reminded me a lot of Napa. Just of, you know, here you have the balloons, And it's very food, you know, food centric focused, and the food and wine pairings, and you can stay in the vineyards, and just the way in which it looked, it just reminded me of Napa.
There's Busby.
Where's Busby? James Busby is known as the father of Australian and New Zealand viticulture. He is the founder of Hunter Valley, returning from Europe with 20,000 vine cuttings in 1832. James Busby was vital in helping establish Hunter Valley as a key wine region, and in turn, vital in establishing Australia as a grape-growing country. He is the father of Australian wine. So here we're going to talk about Keith Tulloch wines. He is the Hunter Valley's first certified carbon neutral and second in the country as organic and biodynamic. The winery and wines are certified under the Australian government's Climate Active Program. This means that their business and their wine create zero net emissions from grapes to glass. And they've achieved this through a range of sustainability initiatives, which include they constructed a 65 kilowatt solar array, providing a vast majority of their power. They changed their waste mix to maximize paper, cardboard, aluminum, and plastic recycling. They limited use of plastics, and they changed to biodegradable and recyclable alternatives. They changed all lighting to LED. They installed efficient CO2 lines for wine storage, minimizing the CO2 waste. An electric fork to purchase. They have a new winery and irrigation process and fittings that make water use more effective, or I'm sorry, efficient. They use only organic fertilizer in the vineyard, recycling chicken manure and avoiding chemical fertilizers. They grow winter cover crops. They track and report sustainability metrics to the Australian Wine Research Institute, Entwine. That's a picture of their vineyard.
Beautiful.
Yep. So Hunter Valley also has a distillery. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm one ahead of myself. Matilda Bay Brew House. This brew house produces their alcoholic ginger beer, made using a 300-year-old recipe, and it's in the Matilda Bay Brew House. And then we have the Hunter Valley Distillery. It's AOC certified organic, and they have a nice line of gins. And I picked the Mystery Gin tonight because I really like the color.
Yeah.
The Mystery Gin actually changes to a shade of pink with the addition of tonic water, and it's sweet and fruit taste, with overtone of blood orange, and it can be enjoyed with tonic water, fruit style cocktails. So there's like a lot of stuff to do in this Hunter Valley. There's a ton of good restaurants. They have restaurants, breweries, cideries, distilleries, and other products that they have. They're big into cheese, olive oil, and olives. There's a lot of local cheeses that you can buy there that are produced in the Hunter Valley. This is a cheese shop, so with all local cheeses.
Yeah, we can't have food. We can't
a lot.
We cannot go through a Wifebet Street without at least one picture of cheese.
That's right. When I was doing the research, it reminded me a lot of just like Napa, just the way the. It looked like the energy of the region and everything.
Awesome.
So.
Well, that is the Hunter Valley in a nutshell. And I'm all for, you know, Debbie and I keep putting little checks of where we're going to go when we start doing these girls' trips together.
Yeah, we'll start having these Wine for Vet Street trips.
Yeah, I'm all for it. So This has been added to that, although I've always wanted to go to Australia and New Zealand. So, but we will just make sure this is one of the ones that we go to. But wanted to thank everybody for showing up and for, you know, supporting Wine for Vet Street. And I hope we are, you know, some states are starting to partially open up. So I hope we are looking at the tail end of this and we can get back to whatever the new normal is going to be. I just want to be able to see other people, really.
I know, I'm telling you.
Not through a screen.
Trying to type in the registration link. Here's the link for next month's registration.
So the interesting thing about next month, we are very, very excited. I'm going to let Debbie tell you, but we are so excited about next month because we decided that it was going to be I, which is a difficult letter. We decided Wine for Bet Street was going to be Indigenous Yeast. And we are very excited because, Deb?
We are going to have the owner of Father and Daughters Winery with us talking about Indigenous Yeast. He does all their wine. His name is Guy, and they're going to do, he does all the wines are wild fermentation. And he's going to be with us, and he's going to talk about his story, Fathers and Daughters, and I'm not going to say anything because I don't want to give it away, but you kind of can tell from the name. And he's going to, you know, talk to us about Indigenous yeast and why he chose it and, you know, talk about the differences between that and commercial yeast and the choices that he's made and, you know, the different challenges that they face using it.
So it's going to be a little different of a format because we have the sponsor for this episode. So we're not going to go through so much history and, you know, it's going to be a different format. It's going to be more of an interview with Guy. And I'm going to tell you, we're going to get a little geeky. I am so excited because we are going to geek out on Indigenous yeast because remember, microbiologist here. So we're going to do a little geekdom going on next month. So Deb, what is the date of next month?
Monday, June 15th.
All right. So there we have it. So please join. And we are excited to have Fathers and Daughters with us as a sponsor for next month's episode. And I am so excited to get down and dirty with Indigenous yeast.
That's right. So we'll see everybody next month. Have a good month. Be safe. Stay healthy.
Bye, guys.
This has been another episode of Exploring the Wine Glass. Thanks for listening. If you have suggestions on what topics you would like me to discuss, please reach out on social media. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as Exploring the Wine Glass. I'm also on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt Budd. Of course, you can always email me at exploringthewineglass@gmail.com. If you enjoyed our podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast catcher to help others find me more easily. Until next week, slàinte.